everyone, and welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Christine. This is episode 28, and today we're going to be discussing our most influential albums through our lives. Musical albums, that is. And we'd love to hear yours after the fact. So please drop them in whatever comments we have, because I find this fascinating. The topic is so interesting because music has the power to transport you and transcend time. Like, the right album in the right moment is a lot like getting the right book in the right moment. It can get you through something really hard and emotional. It can inspire you, embolden you, make you feel less alone. Like, and years later, you can hear it and be thrown back to a moment that maybe you forgot, but is so quintessential to that song that you're listening to. It's so cool. It's magical.
As like I was crafting my list, it was interesting because I have so many favorite artists, but not necessarily my favorite albums. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll skip, you know, three or four songs in that album, but it's, yeah. So we could do a whole other episode on like favorite music artists, favorite songs and all of that. But it was like very fun to go back and trying to figure out like which albums got you through. Like, you just put the CD in, or if it was you bought the whole album on iTunes.
It was really interesting, like you said, because a lot of my favorite artists, those albums not aren't necessarily the most influential albums I listen to. Like, they're not the ones that inspired me to do this or that. So it was a list that it took some deep thought, and I sat there for an hour, like, thinking back through, like, my early childhood and forward, and I really enjoyed it. And, yeah, I would love to hear any of y'all's. So if you follow us on Instagram, it's at Those Forking Fangirls. You can comment on the picture we post there for the episode, or if you're watching the live on YouTube, the visual version on YouTube, hello, you can comment here. Please drop your most influential albums in the comments, because I'm so excited to hear all of yours.
You know, I want to put all yours in a playlist and listen to them, because I haven't really listened to any of those.
Oh, the ones that I put down? Yeah. I'm excited to hear yours, because I didn't get to see it yet. I didn't get to see the list. All right. But before we move into our most influential albums, we're going to dive into Snap Crackle Pop Culture News. Natasha, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, The Little Mermaid is coming out. Well, it's out today across the world, or at least the United States. And this has just been like 5 years in the making. I feel like I've been supporting this film, and I'm so excited to see it. Then the album dropped. I haven't really listened. I listened. There's like a few songs on Instagram and TikTok that my friends have been using. And there's new songs, and they're so catchy. And Halle did a whole performance at Disneyland, and she's saying part of your world, and she is the Little Mermaid. Like, she is Ariel, and I know I'm gonna cry. Yeah, Amy says I cry at every trailer. I'm so excited. I'm excited too. And then Halle is also in The Color Purple, and the trailer for the musical just dropped. Christine, have you seen The Color Purple?
I have not. It was really big, I feel like, in the 2000s. Is that
when the Color Purple? 2000s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never saw it. Have you?
It's yes. I watched it multiple times because my mom really loved the movie. It's very sad. It wasn't. I always like dreaded watching it because it was just so awful. But it has a great ending, and now we have a musical version, and I'm wondering how that's going to make me cry even more. And it's I don't have all the details. I know Oprah either like wrote it or what or something like that. But
she produced the movie, right?
Produced the movie, and then this one is probably being produced by her.
Very cool. I have to watch that movie, I guess. I feel kind of out of the loop whenever it's brought up because I never saw it. We were kind of young when it came out.
Very young, right? And I watched it way too young.
I don't remember like how old I was. I just remember being young when it came out.
Christine, what do you have on the news agenda?
All right. Well, Brennan, coming at you with some Taylor Swift news this week that's not actually totally news. Taylor played through a shitstorm of rain in Foxborough, Massachusetts. I don't know if any of y'all saw videos. It was literally downpouring on her, and she played the whole show. I think there were like two nights of rain. And during the second one, she started trying to play something on the piano, and the piano started just like playing by itself.
It was like a ghost.
Yeah. And so the rain ruined her piano, and I can't imagine how many other things that it ruined, which sucks for everyone on the tour who probably had to replace it.
Poor piano.
The poor piano. I know. And poor Taylor. I was just really worried after. I was like, is she going to get ill from playing like 3 hours in the rain two nights in a row?
Right?
I hope not.
It also looks like it looked kind of scary. Of her, like, I saw some clips after Christine told me about it. And of her, like, her dancers dancing on like the wet stage.
Yeah, but it looked awesome in pictures. I feel like she's like, I'm doing it for the art. The aesthetic is so rock star, all those pictures. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. And so she's been seen going in and out of Electric Lady Studios in New York City with Jack Antonoff all week. So I'm really excited. It looks like she's recording new music, which makes sense because that's there's a lot crazy. Of stuff happening.
I don't
love life sphere.
It's crazy that she's on tour and also recording music at the same time.
I know, but
I don't know how she's doing both.
Inspiration strikes. I'm so looking forward to whatever she puts out next, because there's so much of her story that we're kind of in the dark on, and I would love to hear what she has to say through her music.
Mm-hmm.
And she also said at one of her recent shows that she's the happiest she's ever been, and everything in her life makes sense. Feels like it makes sense. So
okay,
good for her. Happy that she's happy. And all right, also in music news, Kesha has a new album out. It dropped. It's called Gag Order. I listened to it the other day while I was getting ready. It's very almost sad. It's her journey, and it's very raw, and you could feel her struggling like through the way that she sings these songs. Like, her voice is very pained, and a lot of the words come out drawn out, and like she's being tortured by them. And it's almost to the point where like I feel I'm not like with her on it. I'm like sad for her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this song about like hate me harder. Like, I can take it now. I know how strong I am. But also it wavers back and forth between feeling that way and also feeling like it's actually really hurting her, you know? And I guess that's probably what she was trying to do with it.
Yeah. But is it the thing is, she can't make music or something, or what is that?
There was a gag order, I think, on talking about specific things, and the music has to be made, I think, with a
certain
specific company that she signed with. I don't know the specifics, and so I don't really feel comfortable talking on it, but she, you know, she couldn't talk about certain things and couldn't. I think she was in one of the songs, she says she was getting sued because of some tweets her mom put out, and it was complete bullshit, apparently. I don't know what the exact situation is, though. Whatever it is, it wasn't fun. And she received a lot of hate. And now that she's, like, coming back, a lot of people, she was saying in an interview, are like, I want the old Kesha back. And she's like, just like that Taylor Swift song, she's like, well, that Kesha's dead. She was very young when she made TikTok. And it's very different now.
She's been through a lot.
Well, she did. TikTok is her first single. She invented the
I know. I just
TikTok being cool.
For a second, I just I was like, she invented TikTok.
TikTok on the clock. Yeah. Make the body drop. Oh, oh, oh. All right. So that is all of our Snap, Crackle, Pop Culture news this week. We're going to move into what right now?
Woo!
So, okay. What have you been reading this week, Natasha?
Okay. I did start a book. I'm only two chapters in. It's been my bathroom book. I don't need to explain that further. I bought Mr. Darcy Takes a Wife, and it's a sequel written by another author. Now, why I didn't write the author's name down, I'm very sorry. But it's all written in like the same old English style, and it's like a sexy, spicy sequel to Pride and Prejudice. Nice. But like, doth do you take, you know, my dress off?
I have a hard time getting through.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I ended up just getting the audiobook. So I'm like, this is gonna take me forever to read this.
I just want a quick pop up to what Cheyenne said, that during the bad storm, they started at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. and she stayed up performing till 2 a.m. that night, Taylor Swift. That's cray cray. She's dedicated, and I love that.
Christine, tell us what book you're reading while I let my dog out to pee.
All right. So I read Today, Tonight, and Tomorrow. Just Today, Tonight, Tomorrow by Rachel Lynn Solomon this week. I took my first do nothing day. I don't know if y'all watched my most recent sibling tag, but I had to invent a holiday for one of the questions, and I invented like do nothing day, and there was an argument about when it should be, and I finally took it on Sunday, and I just read a book all day for fun, and it was amazing. And this book was so adorable. It's a rom-com coming of age. It's like the books I like to write, where it's more romance focused, but it's definitely a coming of age novel. And our lead character is fighting to be valedictorian. It's her graduation day, and it's her last day of school, and they're gonna find out who valedictorian is, but she has a nemesis. This guy has been neck and neck with her all through high school in anything you can compete on. Like, there's an essay contest and they're both in the running for first place, or like student council, they're both fighting for president, or like anything leadership oriented or anything academically oriented, they're neck and neck. One wins this, the next one wins this. And it's kind of like propelling them through high school because they're just always at each other's necks. And it's graduation, it's the last day of school, and they find out he gets valedictorian. And she's like super bummed. But he's like nice to her that day. They usually exchange jabs, and like every morning he like texts her to taunt her, and he texts back, and she texts back taunting him. Like, it's the best sort of love to hate high school age-ish romance. But like, they're graduated, and the seniors have this game called Howl. It's like a scavenger hunt across the city, and the first one to win it gets like all this money that they've raised throughout the year extra to use for college. And so she really wants this money for her college because she's been working to save up for to make up the money that her scholarship doesn't cover. Mm-hmm. And obviously her nemesis wants to win too, and he needs the money as well. And they end up having to team up through circumstances I won't
spicy
divulge. And of course, like, you're getting hints that he has a crush on her. And obviously she's like obsessed with him. It's kind of like Harry and Draco, how like Harry's always talking about Draco.
Oh my, wow, you just told me.
She's like, her friends are like, we haven't seen you for like a month because you're always doing stuff with McNair, and she's like, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah, you're kind of obsessed with him. And she's like, I am not obsessed with him.
And they're obsessed with me.
And so through the night, they kind of start to come to terms, or she starts to come to terms with the fact that, like, maybe she does like him, and she becomes, like, more attracted to him through the day as she learns more about him, because they only know, like, this academic stuff about each other. They don't actually know about each other's lives, but through the scavenger hunt, they end up learning more about each other, and it's so fun, so sweet, and I loved it, and I cried a bunch. She wants to be a romance novelist, and everyone has, like, shamed romance novels around her whole life, so she has this, like, big secret that, like, she's writing a romance book, but she's afraid that, like, everyone's gonna tear her down, including her parents, who are authors. So
bummer. Well, what TV shows have you been watching?
So I started Exo Kitty, which is a spinoff of To All the Boys I Loved Before, and written and produced by Jenny Han and others. But I know Jenny Han has written some of it, and she's a main producer. She's had a big hand in this, and it follows the youngest sister, Kitty, as she goes to boarding school in Seoul, I think. Yeah. It's KISS, so Korean Institute. I don't remember.
Of Seoul?
It's KISS, though. Okay.
Keep it stupid.
I obviously haven't watched
keep
enough
it
of
simple,
it yet.
Stupid.
It's not Keep It Simple, Stupid School. It's a good school, and it's really sweet. It does feel more young adult to me. Like, it feels younger than To All the Boys I Loved Before. And maybe that's something that, like, as you start to get to know the characters, you get more into it, and you're not feeling that as much. I was just feeling that in the first two episodes because of the tropes that were happening. There's, like, a miscommunication that happens throughout the first two episodes, but by the end of the second episode, Kitty is catching on. But I hope that miscommunication dies quickly. I just want to get to the romance parts. But I'm excited to watch it. I love everything Jenny On does. So I will be watching the rest of it. What about you? What have you been watching this week?
The Great Season 3 just dropped on Hulu, and we started watching that. It's such a good show. It's so funny and just so well written, and it's like, I think this might be its last season. I don't know. I'm not sure yet. But it's my fave, and I love it. And I wish it was beloved as much as people love, like, Bridgerton, because it's that good.
Yeah, I need to watch it still. And people do love it. I mean, on Armchair Expert, they talk about The Great all the time.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
It's very widely respected show, but I just haven't watched it yet. I've watched the first episode or some of it. I just remember her on the swing in the opening scene.
You've only watched the first episode? You need to watch all of it. It's so funny. Alex is... I don't laugh at a lot of things. I'm not, for some reason. But Alex laughs at a lot. He loves that show.
Yeah, I do. I want to watch it. I have a hard time with period pieces. I don't know why. I just have a hard time starting them.
They're my favorite.
I know they are. I want to watch it, but when I start it, sometimes I just find myself being like, I don't know. Before I've even given it a chance. Which is so annoying, I know. Mm-hmm. What movies have you been watching this week?
I actually haven't been watching anything. It was a busy week. I have been listening to a lot of Armchair Experts. So that's the podcast Christine got me on. And I literally, like, scrolled back to the beginning and then started from the beginning, because I was like, I just need to hear all these different interviews and how these different shows started.
Yeah, they're really great interviewers. I mad respect. All right. I watched Hannah Gadsby's new special. They did Nanette, which is, like, a really renowned special. Did you ever watch Nanette? No.
No. Okay.
I think I talked about it a long time ago because it was so good. But it's one of those specials that it starts off funny and then it gets really emotional. And it's just really profound by the end of it. And this one is definitely more lighthearted. So Hannah just got married over the time in the pandemic, and it's and she starts off. They start off the show. Their pronouns are they, them. So they start off the show kind of telling the story of their romance, and it's really fun, but also a little dark. Which tracks for their brand. But I had a fun time. And I also watched Air, which was Air is Ben Affleck and
Matt Damon.
Matt's new movie. And it's the story of how Nike didn't go under because they signed Michael Jordan and created the Air Jordan shoe, and that blew their company up into what it is today. And I don't know why I was expecting it to, I don't know, be more like a bigger story. Yeah. I was honestly, I've watched Space Jam so many times. I tweeted this, but I felt like the whole movie I was waiting for Space Jam to start. Like, and then it just ended, and I was like, wait, where's the Space Jam part? Like, where's the montage of Michael Jordan doing really well and wearing these Jordans? And
that, like, would make spreading, a lot of sense.
Spreading the love of them, you know? I was just wanted to see people wearing them and getting excited about them. I wanted to see the payoff of their work there. And it kind of just ended with the people in the office being like, hell yeah, we did it. We signed him.
Yeah, I agree. It felt like a short movie, and like I said last week, it just, I'm like, what's with these, you know, emotional capitalist movies?
Well, we're watching. I don't think that's not what, like, the part of it that felt unfinished was, because, like, we love emotional capitalist movies here. Like, we love a success story, like the American dream. Like, that's, like, again, it's, like, very on brand for America. But the fact that we didn't dig into any of the characters as people is what I feel like made it feel less well-rounded and less like a narrative, like a movie, because we never get to know Matt Damon's character outside of work. We never really get to know Ben Affleck's character outside of work. We get hints about him, and I like how he's so quirky and interesting, but we don't know what any of these people look like, except for what Jason Bateman's character, which I really love that we got a touch of backstory with him. But and it gave it like a tiny bit of that heartstring pull that we needed. But I really wish we got more on that end. And I liked all the personal touches. Like, I really loved Viola Davis as Michael Jordan's mom. And I really loved the part where she was on the phone with him like that. That really made the movie good. I feel like those emotional moments between her and talking to Matt Damon.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was fine. I didn't love it because I didn't feel like as much heartwarming stuff as I wanted to. Anyway. All right. I think that's all of our things. What right now is this week. We're going to move on to our main discussion. But before we do, I quickly want to say thank you. We want to say thank you to all y'all listening out there. We appreciate your support so much. And if you're not already, we'd really love it if you follow the show for free in your favorite podcast app. If you like watching the visual version on youtube.com/@thisworkingfangirls, if you could just click the subscribe button for free, that would be great so you don't miss an episode. If you could hit the like button, that helps us out. Again, commenting, very helpful. Telling a friend you think would like the show about our show is a really great way to help us spread the word about Those Working Fangirls. Again, we're a new podcast, so any of this really helps us, makes a difference. We're trying to get the word out there to everyone we can. And if you want to support the show in a bigger way, we have a Patreon, and we have a lot of fun perks over there. Our main big perk from every week is our half an hour extra show called Fangirl Tea Time, where we dig deeper, talk about more personal topics. If you, you know, if you subscribe to the our Team Jacob tier or higher, you get that. You get the show ad-free. And you have so much extra content if you're just coming in now to go explore once you become a patron. So, and then we have two other tiers. All of those perks are in our Patreon page, patreon.com/thoseforkingfangirls.
Woo.
All right. Woo. Okay. We're going to be, okay. What was that? Okay. Back to our main discussion. We're going to move on into talking about music, albums, our most influential albums that had the biggest impact on us through our lives leading up to now. And Natasha, I'm going to start this by asking you, like, are you an album skipper normally? Is it like rare for you to listen to the full album?
Yes. It just depends which artist it is, I feel like. I always try. If it's one of my favorite artists, I will listen through the whole thing. And if it doesn't grab me, then I probably will just skip around. But I feel like I was more of a skipper in my early days. Like, now I will just, like, give it a listen. And if it nothing, like, really sticks, I probably won't listen to it again. But I think back when we had CDs and we were in a car and we had to switch them out, like, I distinctly remember my mom being like, skip, skip, skip on, like, the Shania Twain album, and, like, only wanting to listen to, like, the bops on that, and then then moving on to the next CD, or, like, Spice Girls. I think I only liked a few songs on the Spice Girls album. But yeah. What about you? Are you a skipper?
Well, I used to be, like you're saying. So they used to sell, like, single CDs with, like, two songs on them, and one would be a remix of the single. And I would buy those, like, at the CD store for my, like, CD player with my headphones. Like, I remember distinctly getting It's Complicated by Avril Lavigne and being so excited about it. And I remember having the Vitamin C song, As We Go On, We Remember, their only song. And that was the song on there. And then there was, like, one other song and a remix of that. So at that time, it was kind of, like, more accessible to, like, a youth who doesn't have much money to just buy the single instead of buying the whole album. And when we did get the album, like the Spice Girls album, like you're talking about, I would, like, skip around to, like, the good songs and never listen to the other songs in full. But, and then come, like, eighth grade, ninth grade, when iTunes started being a thing, we would get in the caps of our Snapples or sodas. I can't remember which one it was.
Snapples.
There was... Was it Snapples?
I think
you get one free iTunes download. So I would get a Snapple at lunch every day so I can get an iTunes download, but you couldn't listen to the full album for free. Like, there was no streaming the album. So that also added to, like, people just being like skippers, because you would get the song you wanted for free and then not be able to listen to the rest. So even when you got the album, sometimes it was like, oh, I like these songs. Let's just skip around to them.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm like that now, because I really was trying to put Lizzo's album on this, but I don't love all of her songs. Like, I love her main bops and, like, a couple of them. I feel like Selena Gomez is another artist where I only like her main bops. Like, I don't love the whole album.
Yeah. So once I had it, I didn't know the joy of listening to a full album until there was an album that I loved in full. And then I changed, because now I will give any good song that I hear, I will go find the album and listen to the entire album. Like, when Spotify did their wrap up, they accurately pegged me as the person who listens to a full album every time.
I am not.
So yeah, I have become that. I love the storytelling aspect of it, because once you listen to a full album, you're like, whoa, this is cohesive and, like, tells a chapter of someone's life. Mm-hmm. I looked at it completely differently, and it wasn't just songs anymore. It was a story, and I love a story, obviously. Yep. So that first album for me was 2004, Avril Lavigne's Under My Skin, which was just full of banger after banger. I don't know if you are an Avril Lavigne girly.
I was not.
Okay. All right. I, like, she was my jam. Like, punk rock girl. Avril Lavigne was everything. Under My Skin was the shit, Nicole. So, like, okay, I'm just going to name some songs. So if you're not familiar with the name Under My Skin, you're going to know some of these. Like, there's Together, My Happy Ending, Nobody's Home. No? Okay, that one was big. Fall to Pieces, Slipped Away.
I don't know any of these.
Oh, my God. The whole album was perfect, and I got to see her live, and it was the best day ever.
How old were you in 2004?
So I was gonna be 14, so I was probably 13. Slipped Away wrecked me too. I think it was about her grandfather slipping, passing, and it was so sad. Yeah, and it was so good. And me and my BFF Jenna just like listened to it all the time, everywhere, the whole album. Yeah, so it was like that angsty, like going into freshman year, like super awkward time.
Oh my gosh. Wait, freshman year was 2004 for you?
I was going into freshman year. Yeah. Okay. So like the second half, like September was my freshman year.
Okay.
In 2004.
Do you have any music on here like in elementary school for you?
None of them had like the full album impact. Oh, like that would be Britney Spears and Spice Girls, but like I would skip around on those for sure-sies.
Okay.
But yeah, Avril got me through like my super awkward, like I hadn't gone through puberty yet at all. And like people loved to make fun of that. And like it was like my really awkward, like me and Jenna both wanted to be on the cheerleading team, the competition team, but like we were most definitely like the nerdy people who wanted to be on the competition team, and we ended up being the alternates. And it was just like, you look at the pictures, the most awkward of times. That was our Avril Lavigne like peak, peak time. So what was the first album you listened to with no skips?
Okay, so the reason why I asked the elementary school question, because I was going through this, there are so many albums that I loved like in elementary school that just brought me back. And this one is, this one's crazy. So this is Norah Jones' Come Away With Me in 2002. In 2002, I was in second grade going into third grade, okay? But I had the album, okay, because she won all the Grammys, and then my mom bought the album for me, like, in the next year, so this would have been, like, third, fourth grade. And I had a lot of friend drama during that time. There was, like, this really mean girl, and I never, like, this was so visceral, because I started listening to the album again, and there's this mean girl who like told me I couldn't be friends with like my other friends, and they were my best friends, and well, guess what, they are, like, I'm still friends with them today, and the other girl is nowhere to be seen. But it was just awful. And I remember Alex and I had gotten our own rooms, so because we slept in the same room until we were about like in second grade or first or second grade, and then we had our separate rooms. And then I had like a boombox, and I had Norah Jones. I had some Britney Spears CDs, but like Norah Jones was my like angsty like jam. She's so soothing and calming. And I remember just sitting in my room crying. I think this was a little bit later, but yeah, like fourth grade. And Alex coming to my room, and he's like, Mom, Natasha's crying to Norah Jones. I was like 11.
Norah Jones just sounds like such a grown-up like musician to me. Like, I only know Come Away With Me. Is that her, that song? Like, in okay, that's...
Yeah,
I think that's all I know of hers.
I still was like listening to her. Yeah, I mean, I listened to her like all throughout like elementary school and middle school. I don't know why is the other big one on the album, and there's a bunch of others, but they're all just so like soothe. But it just makes a lot of sense. Like, at the time, I was watching very adult movies.
Yeah.
My music choices were very adult. So, yeah.
Nice. All right. So, we're going to go into, like, the list that we've made now. And basically, the prompt I wrote down here is, like, what would you say are your top most influential, critical moment, deeply loved in full albums of all time? And like that stand the test of time when you think back to like what were my influential things? Because I know there's some albums I listened to like a lot during these different times that just they didn't make an impact on me. I feel like today I don't think there was an impact from the album. And yeah, so the albums that you still remember all too well.
I think we need to put a disclaimer on here that Taylor Swift, we would love to put every single album on our list. She is the artist of our lives, but I only picked one because I'm like, I would like to put some others down that also made an impact. But
Taylor. Yeah, I mean, I have the ones that made the biggest impact. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to get through as much as we can. And then if there are like any super personal ones that we missed today, we're going to move them into fangirl tea time. And because I tried to make this list to be 7 and it ended up being 10 because music has been such a big part of my life. I was obsessed with it for so long. And I, not that I'm not like in love with music now, but I used to like hunt down music. Like I was like on iTunes looking at all the new releases every single week. iTunes was my jam. It was my favorite thing.
Mine
I
loved too.
Looking at the charts. Yeah. Do you want to start?
Sure, I'll go. Okay, so this was really hard. We're going from like 1 to 10, so I feel like we're starting pretty big. But I did not know what to put first, but I put Adele 21, which came out in 2011.
Oh, your years are kind of like lining up with mine. Did you do that on purpose, or are we just like
no,
on the same page here?
I put the second one as our same because
okay,
I wanted to talk about it together.
Yeah.
So I in 2011 was like a very tumultuous time in my life, like all through high school. So I was in high school from 2008 to 2012, and so 2011 I was my junior senior year. And I had never seen an artist who looked like me before. And she was like my everything. And I loved her music and I loved just belting her songs out. And she, I mean, those are some of like her best songs are on that album. Like Someone Like You, Rolling in the Deep, Don't You Remember, Turning Tables. Ugh, I listened to that last night and I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot how much I love this song. Or like, Don't You Remember. But I distinctly remember driving in the car with my best friend Abby and kind of looking over at her, and we were singing Someone Like You, and I'm like, this is how I'm gonna remember like my senior year. And she was just, that album was so influential for me because that's what got me through. Like I had a lot of personal drama during that time in my life, and Adele was my crying soundtrack to
Yeah, her songs are so powerful from that time, especially.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know she was, but I was seeing like on her singles were everywhere, like on the radio.
Yeah, like that there's was, like Set Fire to Set Fire to the Rain, Rolling to the Deep. Rain. Yeah, all of those just charted.
So my first one here is also 2011. 2011 was like one of the most, I want to say transient years. That's not the right word, but like transformative years for me. So we're exactly 4 years of school apart. You're in the same school track as Olivia was, which I did not realize. So she also graduated 2012 from high school. And I was in my junior year of college. and I was studying abroad, and Avril Lavigne's Goodbye Lullaby came out in 2011. So that was like her lead single was What the Hell. That's probably the one you know the most if you're a casual Avril fan. If you are an avid Avril fan like me, you know, like the whole album was so cohesive and amazing. And like Smile was a bop, Stop Standing There, Everybody Hurts, Push. I loved all of these. And I went through a lot of like ups and down roller coaster emotionally through my study abroad. And Avril was like there for every step of the way. And like as I was getting toward the end of it, and I felt like really, I was toward the end of my study abroad, like I was ready to be home. Mm-hmm. And I was feeling it really hard every time there was something that like I like just really wanted like comfort wise to eat, or like I like people were busy and everyone got busier toward the end of study abroad. So like you were alone a lot, and because everyone was doing our full time jobs for our internships, so it was much harder to hang out with anyone. And I got like really lonesome and like just again in my feels. And Goodbye Lullaby was so good. I just have visceral memories of like tearing up and walking around the city to it all the time. And I still love that album. I will put it on and be like transported right back to that time. I wrote a lot of Again But Better with that on in the background, even though it doesn't feel like Again But Better-y to me in terms of like that story, but like it feels like my time abroad, and it brings me back to that mindset. I love that album. It's so good. I feel like not many people talked about Goodbye Lullaby. It probably wasn't like, it wasn't a huge hit like Under My Skin, but I loved it so much.
I feel like Avril's big time was in like the early 2000s, and
her like exploding time was, but she was still pretty big in 2011. Like the Best Damn Thing, I think, was 2007. And that's when she got married and was really happy. And Goodbye Lullaby, I think the relationship had collapsed. It was another sad album. It was so good. She is so good at a sad punk rock album.
I don't know any Avril. I was never like an Avril girl.
You know What the Hell though, right? No.
Maybe.
Yes, you do. Like, sing what the hell? Dun, 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 dun. I'm like, you say that I'm messing with your head.
Yeah, yeah, boy. Yeah.
Boy, I like messing in your bed. Yeah. So good. I listened, that was the first single, and I remember my roommates were like, you have to stop playing that song, Christine. And they were like, can you please stop? Like one of my roommates were like, please stop. You just play the same song over and over and over again.
That's Alex to me. I play the same shit over and over again.
So yeah, that was a big one for me. Our next one is the same.
Yep.
Do you want me to start it and you can go into yours? Okay. All right. So next on the list is, we're jumping all over the place timeline wise. I feel like, so bear with us here. This next one is Taylor Swift's Folklore 2020. And I think everyone had something in 2020 that made this album kind of like a life raft. And I've talked about mine before, but I was in the middle of like a situation where a relationship was gonna come to an end. I knew it in my head, and I was having trouble grappling with the idea of it being a failure too, because one of my, like, I don't know, my big thing is like I need to be like the best at this or else I have no value. And like, and I thought that like I knew that this was gonna work, and it wasn't working. I was like, wow, I can't believe that this isn't going to work out. And so Folklore came at the perfect time to like process and digest that. And it was just everything, every emotion was like reflected in her music that I was feeling. It was perfect. And I will never forget listening to that album for the first time. And then for the like a million times after it.
Yes.
And yeah, huge, huge impact.
I bought the CD, which I have not done that in a very long time. Like I was driving in my old car the other day, and it came out of the CD player. I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot I had this. I mean, I think folklore was such a gift to everyone because it was July of 2020. So we were like in the middle of the pandemic because pandemic March, April, May, June, July. So we had 5 months in. And here's this new album that comes out. And I was at that time, it was 6 months since my mom died. And I didn't have much to look forward to. And I was like alone a lot. I mean, I was fucking still going to work. That's a whole other story. And I would just, that's all I did was I went back and forth to work, was driving in the car, and was in a new apartment and like so much newness. And then here's a new album from Taylor, and there's so many. So I have a lot of memories of driving in the car, just like crying to like the tears ricochet. And some of the songs I would have to skip because it would just make me like so emotional, just like thinking about loss and grief. Now I loved it when I first heard it because it was like a huge cinematic movie playing out in my head and trying and coming up with different characters as we listened to it. And it was just such a beautiful story that she wove. And even now, like even listening to it now, I get such different feelings and I'm seeing so many different images just every single time I listen to it.
Yeah. I loved that album. I thought it was about something, and then I got to the end and I was like, wait a minute. And like through her word choices and everything, there was like another story underneath it all. Every time you listen to it, you'd find more clues, and like the you know, the part of me like obsessed with puzzles and yes. stuff immediately was like lit on fire. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to listen to this again and again and again and again. It was truly such a light during such a dark time mm-hmm. in so many people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What's next on your list, Natasha?
I have the Twilight. Okay, I put Twilight down, but I also put New Moon down. I could probably put all of the Twilight soundtracks. Basically, the Twilight movie soundtrack. So Twilight was obviously so influential, and it, you know, it bled into my music life. And because of Stephenie Meyer and even the songs that she had suggested on her website, I would track down all of those. I found so many new artists through that way. And like, that's how I found new artists, like Florence and the Machine and all of that. And those albums, I bought all the CDs. I had it downloaded on iTunes. Like that was my music, like freshman, sophomore year. And I was just obsessed. It was the most influential movie soundtrack in my life. And like these songs will transport me like anytime I listen to it. And like there's so many popular songs from it. Like every time Rosalind comes up by Bon Iver, I'm like, I was just watching Twilight or New Moon with my Gen Z friends, Taya and Liam. And they were like, wait, this is where like Rosalind. I'm like, yeah. New Moon made it popular. Okay. Bon Iver was nothing before New Moon.
so many artists exploded out of Twilight soundtracks for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I first saw Florence's name. I can't remember if I like saw her song before I saw the Twilight album.
I think I listened to Cosmic Love before.
Yeah, I think I did mm-hmm. too. And I think I loved it. I loved that album. It was perfect.
Well, I would relate. I related Cosmic Love. I'm like, this is such a Bell and Edward song.
Of course. she had such a different sound. It was like a romance novel and a rock alternative sound. Mm-hmm. And I loved that.
Yeah, it was just like a more intense Norah Jones.
And I loved how weird she was. Yes. Like, her music gets really weird and different, and it's like Dog Days Are Over. Is that what the song's called?
Yeah, Dog Days Are Over.
Like, that song kind of reminded me of Queen, and how, like, it's not afraid to go so many different places, so many different pauses. Mm-hmm. I love that. Ugh,
she's just impeccable. I love her. She really is. She's later down my list, but Twilight.
Back to Twilight.
Like, I caught my, like, Paramore was on it. I caught myself, Flightless Bird, Possibility. That's, like, one of the first songs I learned on the guitar. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, Taylor Swift made me learn the guitar, but Possibility was another one that I learned. Gosh, those soundtracks, I mean, still, I was like, I just need to listen to the Twilight Muse. Soundtracks again.
I fell so deep into Muse after that.
Me too.
I loved Uprising, and just, like, I downloaded the whole Muse album, but, like, none of the songs stand out to me until I hear them, because so many of them have the same, like, feel, just, like, intensity, like, running guitars.
Yeah, I both my brother and I were obsessed with Muse. Like, we just didn't. Twilight did that. I love
running out of time. Yeah, Twilight did do mm-hmm. that. Stephanie Meyer did that.
Yeah,
Stephanie
she did.
Meyer did that.
What's your third one?
All right, we're going to get to my number three, but before we do, we have a word from our sponsors. Those Working Fangirls is supported by Manta Sleep. Sleep is so important to our overall health. It just gets harder as we become more adult. Mm-hmm. And a sleep mask can be so helpful in providing a deeper, more restful, uninterrupted sleep. And Manta Sleep makes luxury sleep masks. Studies show that sleep masks can improve cognitive learning, alertness throughout the day. It's just, the pros never end.
Yeah, I mean, I had to put my sleep mask on last night because I was like, I am so anxious. I need to go to bed. And Manta Sleep they're all about the pro nap movement. So if you're into naps and you want to take that quick little sleep, you can just pop on the sleep mask. It's better than a cup of coffee, and it's great for your health and your energy levels. And what makes better sleep than a comfortable, portable blackout curtain, complete with razor-thin Bluetooth headphones? Manta Sleep makes the world's best sleep mask. They provide 100% blackout for deeper sleep, and they're infinitely adjustable for a personalized fit. And they're also made with soft, breathable materials with zero pressure on your eyelids and lashes.
They are indeed. And I love their nifty travel bag. Mm-hmm. I love the overall comfort of this thing is fantastic. And it makes it so when you are sharing a room with people and you're going to sleep, mm-hmm. it is possible without putting in your AirPods, which are terrible for sleeping. Like, first of all, they hurt when you're leaning on your side, which is how most of us sleep. And second of all, they get lost and they're expensive, and you do not want to lose your AirPods in a random bed at a hotel.
Like, can you imagine?
A luxury sleep mask with Bluetooth headphones, the Manta Sleep sound mask, is the answer to those issues. This is an investment in a better, more healthy traveling sleep life.
Yes.
And it has about a 20-hour battery life, tabs for easy speaker adjustment, and there's no audible notifications when the battery is running out. So it's not going to wake you up in the middle of the night with loud beeping if the battery's going dead.
Mm-hmm.
It will never jolt you out of a peaceful sleep.
No. And you can just connect your phone via Bluetooth. And I like to play, like, my rain sounds or my deep sleep playlist, especially if I have family staying over and I have screaming children or I'm house sitting and I can't control if the sun is hitting my face in the morning. Because that's the worst when you, like, your alarm is set for 8, but then the sun's streaming in at 7.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if you're looking to improve your sleep quality, your daily naps, you should hit up Manta Sleep. Their luxury sleep masks are linked down below in our show notes, and we have a special code to get you a 10% discount. You can use code FANGIRL, FANGIRL, one word. Code GIF, code fangirl to get 10% off your order. Woo. All right, back to the show. So my number three is Lady Gaga's 2009 Fame Monster. Now, so this is like Bad Romance, Alejandro, mm-hmm. Alejandro, Monster, like Speechless, Telephone, Teeth. Like it only had 8 tracks and every track was a banger. The last one was like Dancing in the Dark, I think. It's a perfect album and it's so creative and weird in a way that like gave me permission to be creative and weird. Like it showed me that pushing the boundaries in that way was okay and beautiful and stunning in so many different, like her performances were like moving art pieces. Bad Romance, that music video changed me. I watched it so many, I studied that music video. Like her eyeballs in that, like they were huge and scary.
Yes.
And like her, I love like a creep factor in art. And like, I love how like happy and sad and creepy her stuff is all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much joy in the dance, but there's so much pain in like her weird, like there's shots of her like that look like she's in the shower and she's like hunched over and she's like being sold to like a Russian mobster or something in that video. Like it's a very intense, very like stark video. And I instantly was obsessed with all the aesthetic of this album. And it learning those dances and wanting to like make videos of me doing the dances, like they led to like my first virally videos on YouTube and really also emboldened me to keep making videos regularly. So had a huge impact on me in college.
I mean, yeah, she was so different than any other pop artist at the time. Was Disco Stick on that one?
That was her first album. And the first album was The Fame. And then this was Fame Monster. And with Fame Monster, she kind of re-released all of Fame as like a part two.
Okay.
Because I think that her singles did really well on The Fame, but the whole album didn't get known. And there were so many good ones on that too. Like I debated putting that on, like It Rough and the Disco Stick song is not called that. Love Game. That's what it is.
Oh yeah.
Love
yeah.
Game. So many great ones on that album as well. But they really hit with Fame Monster because that's when she exploded. But I was a hipster Lady Gaga fan. I was pushing her from her very first single.
Alex actually, like, I guess, found Gaga before I did. I remember like driving to a Twilight convention and him being like, listen to this song. It's really cool.
Let's have some fun. This beat is sick.
I want to take a ride on your disco stick.
Don't think too much. Just bust that kick. Yeah, I learned that routine too. And it was like randomly in that music video. So many great songs. What is your number four on your list?
Oh, let me scroll.
Oh, shit. We have another. Oh, wait. No, that's my number four. Where's your number four?
Okay. I was like, my number four is another like angsty thing from elementary school. It's Fallen from Evanescence in 2003. My goodness. So I would say I was so intrigued by Evanescence. Alex and I, again, were big movie watchers when we were younger. And there was a song. I think it was, it might have been My Immortal in it or her other one on that album. It was in Daredevil. And
the one with Jennifer Garner.
Yeah, and Ben Affleck. And Alex and I were like, this song is so good. Like, what is this song? And I remember my best friend Madeline, who I was having the friend drama with, but like she was just in the middle of it. She had the album and we would listen to it at her house, but my mom wouldn't buy me the album because the cover looked like creepy and scary. Because
it's like punk emo.
Yeah, and yeah. Why am I blanking on the main singer's name? Oh, I'm bad fan.
I remember Olivia made a music video to one of their songs with her friends, and she just like did basically black eyes of eyeshadow around her eyes and her friends. It looked like she got punched.
Amy Lee. Yeah, so Amy Lee is just, yeah, it's just her face with the eyeliner. So she, I guess they were my Avril Lavigne, because they were like very early 2000s with like the black makeup, and I think it was Bring Me to Life or Going Under that was in Daredevil. But my mom wouldn't buy me the album, and so I think around like sixth or seventh grade I ended up getting it on iTunes. It was like one of my first iTunes albums.
iTunes purchases.
And this became my soundtrack for like when I was in middle school and when I started reading Twilight. Because when Edward was leaving Bella, I got my iPod out and I put on My Immortal. And I was like, this is going to be emo. I'm going to cry and it's going to make it even worse.
That just brought back a core memory of like my first iTunes purchase. And it was using like one of my free codes, and it was Gretchen Wilson's Redneck Woman. Oh, I am a redneck woman, ain't no high class broad. Just product of my race.
But the whole album is so good. And I put all of Evanescence songs, like every single album. They have a really good, another good album called The Open Door. That's a really great album. And I put all of those songs in my Mortal Instruments playlist. So these songs are really linked to the Shadowhunters for me, because I would just on a loop, like freshman, sophomore year of high school, would just listen and then read at the same time, because it was like that gothic type of music.
Feeling.
Yeah, but if you haven't listened, there's Hello is a really sad, good song. It's so beautiful. And then Tourniquet is really good, too.
All right. So next on my list, this one was huge for me. Lorde's Melodrama in 2017. What a perfect piece of art. It sounded like I was going to say piece of ass. Like my brain was like ass. Oh my gosh. Piece of art. Melodrama. Okay, so this is like Green Light, Sober, Hard Feelings, Writer in the Dark, Supercut. Like so many things that I felt like I related to so deeply that it hurt. Like that is the album that like brought me through the second half of writing Again But Better. And it's like there's so much about like evolving and like the stuff you changing and the stuff around you staying the same, and like suddenly you have grown too much, you've like grown out of it and you don't fit in there anymore, and like you're nostalgic for it, but like it just doesn't work for you in that anymore because you've grown and it's the same and you have to move on. And and there's so much like writer feels in there. Mm-hmm. Like Writer in the Dark and Liability like just would make me cry. Like they were so good. And yeah, I listen to it on repeat over and over and over and over again. And I still like will just like think of like images and feelings like in different moments. I'll be like, my brain will go to the songs. And Supercut, I relate so hard to Again But Better. There's chapters in Again But Better just like named after these songs. Like Green Light. Like there is a chapter called like Green Light. I want it or something in Again But Better. And there's like Supercut was like I listened to that over and over again during like the midpoint of Again But Better, like going into the second half. I felt like it just went so well.
So when you listen to these songs, do they just make you see in character.
They do. They really bring me back to writing. Because also, like, that writing A Game of Better was such a joyous experience. Mm-hmm. So, like, it brings me back to that time where I was just, like, so into writing and having so much fun. And I, of course, like, I've had so much fun writing book 3 and book 4. Like, they both, the book that's, like, angst for me is book 2. Like, I have so much angst around that writing process. But, like, this brings me to, like, such joyous creativity times. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Number five.
Ooh, this is a big one.
Number five is Love Angel Music Baby by Gwen Stefani, 2004.
I knew you were going to have this one.
What?
I said I knew you were going to have this one.
Yeah.
I thought about it for a second, but it didn't have the same impact on me.
I was obsessed with Gwen, like absolutely obsessed between like fifth grade and to eighth grade with both Love Angel Music Baby and Sweet Escape, and these were the soundtracks to my lives, and these were the songs that my cousins and I made dances to, like What Are You Waiting For. It was like a like tick tock tick,
yes,
yeah, and then like Bubble Pop Electric and Luxurious, and it was so fun because my mom also loved these songs, so we would just bop along in the car together to these, and she would like play it throughout the house, and we would like dance together, and yeah, I mean, I was so weirdly obsessed with Gwen because I knew she was an Orange County girl. Like, she grew up in Anaheim, and so am I. And I also went to school with her cousin, and he was in the same grade as us. And I was like, I know someone who's related to Gwen Stefani. And she was my first concert that I chose that I wanted to go to. My parents took me to a lot of weird concerts like Rod Stewart and the B-52s. Not weird necessarily, but not the ones like I would have chosen to go to. And Gwen was the Sweet Escape. That was the concert I went to in seventh grade in 2007. And it was everything. I loved her so much. And this album was just so influential to me.
Yeah, I feel like you touched on something interesting. So your mom also loved the music, mm-hmm. and that makes it so much better. I had this thing where I was looking for constant validation through my music choices. Like, I wanted my parents to like it, and like my dad would always shit all over whatever I was listening to, and my mom, like, she would listen to it in the car with us, but I, like, she was never as into music, I feel like, as I was. I was like obsessed and like my obsession with dance too. Like, I was doing dance all the time, and like I was always making up dances to stuff, and I just had, like, I felt so connected all the time. So like I was constantly like, if there was something I thought my dad would like, I'd be like, yeah, listen to this. You have to listen to it. And I like hoped so hard that he'd like it, that he'd make like a remark. Like, it wasn't as good as like this boomer music that I like. And I'd be like, oh gosh, how can I win him over?
My mom was very into like the new stuff. Like, she's the one who discovered Spice Girls for me and Ricky Martin and all that.
Oh, Ricky Martin.
Yes. And there's so many memories tied to music with her, which is why I feel like I'm not such a big music girly anymore, because it reminds me, like, the next album on my list is very like centered around my mom. And didn't mean to get emotional, but yeah, like, because we would, you know, she was a stay-at-home mom, and like sometimes to fill the time, she would just put on albums. We had like a great sound system, and then also like in the car, like so many drives back and forth from the beach, like during the summer, and we would just like scream music, and you know, she loved Frank Sinatra, and I wanted to put him on here, but I didn't. We'd listen to like his greatest hits.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we should maybe just do one more.
Mm-hmm.
You think? Okay. I think I'm one behind though, so let me do.
Yeah.
Did you just do five?
I did.
Okay. Five. All right. I'm trying to pick which one to do here. Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like I want to mention, okay, so for number five on my list is a 2020 album. And this is the album that got me through writing my second book. Like the way that I associate Lorde's album with Again But Better, Halsey's Manic in 2020 was my Better Together album. Like I listened to the whole thing on repeat. The entire thing's super cohesive. It's super, so like the lead single that you might know is You Should Be Sad or Graveyard.
Yeah.
And there's the other songs I love on it. I love everything on it, but like I Hate Everybody, 3 a.m., 929. It's a really honest, raw album, like where she just like is very transparent about her flaws and working through those and working through this relationship that was traumatizing and like abusive, and like it's about self-reflection and climbing away from the things that are bad for you and coming to terms with your own faults and like being and like loving yourself and all this stuff that I really was channeling into Siri and Jamie. It was the perfect tone. And yeah, her lyrics, she's a poet, obviously. I mean, a lot of like lyricists are, but she also puts out poetry and stuff, and she goes hard in different areas, and I love that. I feel like I have to say this one now. I have so many other ones that are like older, but this one was like, I did the first book. I feel like I have to say the second book because this one always pops into my head. I love these songs, and they're always the song that you want when you're like going through something really like hard and you're kind of pissed off about it, but you want to calm down. Like this is a calm, angry, like processing album.
Okay.
Yeah. Halsey's other albums, like, I don't connect to them as deeply. Like, this is the one.
Okay. One more, you said?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to skip this very emotional one.
Okay.
The next one would be, this came out in 2021. This is Bridgerton, the unofficial musical soundtrack by Barlow and Bear. I was obsessed. Okay, so this was really special. So if you guys don't know this, there is an unofficial Bridgerton musical soundtrack out there. It was created by Abigail Barlow and Emily Bear. Emily Bear is right now on tour with Beyonce playing the piano on stage.
Whoa.
What the heck?
That's amazing.
They won a Grammy for this. So if you guys remember when Bridgerton came out in 2020, of Christmas of 2020, the TikTok like just blew up because Abigail made this song called Burn For You. Then everyone started getting on board and making this whole...
like Bridgerton.
Yeah, making this whole soundtrack and like singing the different parts like Simon and Daphne. And then... They started live streaming during Christmas break how they were writing the songs. So there would be like 2-hour streams of them like making new songs and making new songs to the entire TV show. And because I was so obsessed with Bridgerton, this was like everything to me. And so this was all happening during the election. And so it was a really amazing escape, because they would start streaming when like the January 7th like shit went down, and not during that, but like the day after. And it was just a wonderful escape to watch these two young women so expertly craft these songs that were so perfect that went alongside season one of Bridgerton. And they're so fun to sing. So that all happened in January. And then the album came out in fall. It was right after I came back from London for the first time. And I just repeated, like, it was everything I loved in all together, because I love Disney and Broadway and then my historical romance and Bridgerton. And it was just everything in this album. And it's Abigail Barlow singing all the parts, and it's really fun to sing along to. And it was my number one album in 2021. Like, I don't even want to know how many times I listened to it, multiple times, but it's I loved. So if you guys have watched Bridgerton, you should listen to the soundtrack. It's on iTunes. They won a fucking Grammy for this. And it was so exciting to watch their journey. Unfortunately, it didn't end very well because they got sued. There's like some really bad decisions they made along the course of this. And unfortunately, Netflix and Shonda and Julia Quinn got pretty upset. So, but we still have the music. So,
yes. Yes. At least you have the music and you have the times, the good times. Yeah, when you said that thing about it, like, helping you through the election, it just, like, sparked Hamilton, like, during the 2016 election. That album was, like, a life raft. Okay, so the last one I'm going to say here, I've been trying to decide. Like, just know that red was on my list, but I feel like I want to talk about something different. So I'm going to talk about Death of a Bachelor by Panic at the Disco in 2016.
Wow.
Because, yeah, this album was so good. Every song was a banger. And I, like, this is House of Memories, Don't Threaten Me with a Good Time, Golden Days, Emperor's New Clothes. That, I went to that concert with Paul. So my brother, surprised me with like wanting to get tickets when I was home to go to a Weezer slash Panic at the Disco concert, which was like so nice. Yeah. Cause he's like, oh, one of my favorite bands is playing and one of your favorite bands is playing. And that was such a fun concert to like get to go to something with my brother. And like, we both liked stuff there. I've never, you know, we've never had something like that. We didn't really go to concerts together because our age gap was so big that like music taste was so different. So that was really nice. But so this album came out, I had just broken up with my first boyfriend recently, and 2016 was like a mental reset. All of a sudden I had time to like take care of myself. Like, this is when I first started getting into yoga, but this time I was getting into hooping, which is like the hula hoop dance.
Yeah.
And having the most amazing time. And this album would be like my gauge of how long I've been doing it. So I would put this on and I would hoop until the album was done. And I would have the best time, no skips. And this is also when I first started writing again, but better. So like the beginning joy of like throwing up this story was to Death of a Bachelor.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it the whole album is really nostalgic and reflective. It's romanticizing the past and reprocessing it and trying to figure out like what happened and what it meant in the context of now. At least that's what it was for me. And like songs like House of Memories and Golden Days really connected to Again But Better for me. And I think some of them are on the Again But Better official playlist on Spotify. If you don't know, I make like hardcore playlist for my novels so that when you're reading them, you can hypothetically start at the beginning of the playlist and like get to the end and it goes along with every chapter. Like, I take a lot of time to like count out the pages along with the minutes of each song.
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew you made playlists, but I didn't know that they would actually like go with the length of this chapter.
They do. And I also have guides so that if you're starting from a certain spot, like this is where you should start on the playlist. And so that's on Spotify. You can search like Better Together playlist, a Better Together the Book playlist, or my name. And there's an Again But Better playlist too if you want to listen along, because I did put a lot of work and effort into that because like the music means a lot to me that goes along with everything. And I feel like it really sets the tone. If you're a person who reads with music, it's really fun to read along with the playlists. Anyway, so some of that is on the playlist. And I love Death of a Bachelor.
Do we? We should make like playlists for each of our like most influential albums. That would be fun to
We should. We can link them.
Do we want to like quickly list off the rest or save those for tea time?
We can list off and talk maybe deeper about them in deep time. That way that like you at least have them out there. Yeah. What's left on your list that you didn't get to talk about?
I have The Carpenters, their singles album, which came out in 2000, but it's really music from the 1970s.
Nice.
Born to Die by Lana Del Rey from 2012.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
Such a great album.
That was a big one for me, yep. too.
Ceremonials by Florence and the Machine in 2011. Huge.
That one was so big.
So I went to that concert. That was like my first concert in high school.
Oh my God. Yeah. I never seen her live.
Oh, it was fantastic. She was at the Hollywood Bowl. And then Harry's House by Harry Styles just recently.
Oh, nice.
I feel like this is my soundtrack for like now, for,
yeah,
for, you know, my sewing adventures and the end of my 20s.
Nice. Yeah. I feel like in like 10 years, we'll have like a whole new list because mm-hmm. stuff now, I can't really see what will have a long-term impact. But okay. That's your list, right?
Yep.
All right. Left on my list, I have When We All Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go by Billie Eilish.
Mm-hmm.
2019. This was like my anti-anxiety album. Like on the book tour, I would like put this in nonstop on my flights. For again, a better book tour. I have Red, Taylor Swift, 2012. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that one in tea time. I've got Waking Up, One Republic, 2009. This album, like I don't connect with One Republic songs, I feel like, the same way as I used to. They're like a little more poppy now. Mm-hmm. But this album was like the perfect writing album. And it's so emotional and thoughtful, like in the feeling of the music. And I have Everything in Transit by Jack's Mannequin, 2005. So I didn't listen to that to my freshman year of college, which was 2008 to 2009. But damn, damn, damn. No skippers on that album.
You love the punk rock. I'm not big into punk rock at all.
See, Jack's Mannequin wasn't really punk. It was just like, it was like piano rock. I don't know. I guess, yeah, I would classify it as like a piano rock, like maybe like Billy Joel, but like for millennials. Like, I don't know. Like soft punk. Yeah, I went to this concert and I had the best time, and it was like the scariest mosh pit I've ever been in, because like I had one of those moments where I jumped and I like didn't come down because it was too squished. But anyway, we'll talk about some other tidbits from those faves in Fangirl Tea Time today in our extra show. It's available at patreon.com/thatsworkingfangirls. All right. So we're going to move into this week's Mary Kiss Clove. All right. So I did this week's Mary Kiss Clove. It's Taylor Swift's Ex-Boyfriend Edition.
Wow.
So today we have Jake Gyllenhaal, Joe Jonas, and Joe Alwyn.
She's really big into the J names.
You know what? I almost did just another Joe. I was going to do Joe Carey from Stranger Things, but I went Jake.
Ooh, la, 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 la. I don't know. Okay, because this man is in a committed full-time relationship, I know he's probably good at being a husband. So Joe Jonas, I will marry.
He broke up with her on a phone call.
They were also very young.
I know. No, I'm just kidding. They were very young.
I mean, all of the Jonas Brothers seem like really good husbands.
They were on Armchair Expert this week. Did you listen?
No, I have not yet. I went backwards. Oh my. Jake Gyllenhaal or Joe Alwyn, who do I want to, I don't know, kiss? This is not kill Mary, fuck Mary kill.
I mean, it could be.
It could be.
It could be if you want it to be.
I feel like just because of, what's the I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna kiss Joe Alwyn, and then I'm gonna cliff Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake, yeah, I feel like I'm probably gonna go the same direction here. Definitely cliffing Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, I think, marry Joe Jonas because he seems like the silliest of the three here, and I enjoy him on Instagram. So Mary Jo Jonas and Kiss or F Joe Alwyn. And there we go. There's Taylor Swift's Ex-Boyfriend Edition. Okay, so we're going to move into chapter chat. Before we do, in case you're leaving and don't listen to chapter chat, we've been rereading A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. It's been a time, and we are at the end. So we are talking like the finale chapters. So if you haven't read it yet, this is spoilery for you. Before we get into that, I want to remind you that we really want to know your most influential albums. Like, I am very interested. Please drop them in the Instagram comments, in the YouTube comments, somewhere that we can see them. If you want to email us, go ahead and do that. But it's probably much easier to do the comment. Because yeah, this is a fascinating topic, and I think it's really interesting to hear like the reasons why, and it kind of also gives you a gauge of like where I feel like it gives you a gauge of like how old everyone is too. It's interesting to hear like what albums hit harder for what ages. I really like that, fascinates me. Like when we had Taya on, hearing like her childhood like shows and stuff was really fascinating to me. Maybe it's because I'm writing characters that are like in their early 20s, so I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But I find it really interesting.
I find it, yeah, I feel like Lana is such a big artist for the like Gen Z, because like it came out in 2011, and that's when like a lot of them were like in elementary school and middle school, so kind of like our Nora Jones or Evanescence or Avril Lavigne.
Nora Jones is definitely a generation up, I feel like.
True.
Our Nora Jones. Taylor Swift, I feel like, is the artist of our like upcoming generation, our upbringing. She like grew with us. But yeah, I find it fascinating, so interesting. Would love to hear yours. We're going to go into chapters 40 and 41 of ACOTAR. Here we go.
Okay, chapter 40.
Chapter 40.
Do you want me to go through it or you?
I can do this one. I feel like 41, I was kind of like,
same. We'll make it okay, through together.
We can do both together. Chapter 41 was like a non-chapter.
It really was.
So we've got the second challenge.
Definitely not as exciting as the first.
No. It was like pretty dumb, this challenge. It was basically like, I'm going to murder you unless you figure out what lever to choose.
Pick a lever.
Yeah. They throw her in this pit, and at the bottom is her and Lucien is chained up. There's three levers and there's a riddle or something. She can't read. And the ceiling's coming down and there's like hot spikes that are going to crush them to death. And to stop it, you have to pull lever one, lever two, or lever three, whichever is the answer to the riddle. All we hear the riddle, since she can't read, is grasshoppers bouncing. So we have no idea what the answer was.
It was just so like, it was sad because she couldn't read the words.
I know. It was mean. And
does Amarantha know that she can't read?
I don't know if she knows.
Amarantha?
Like, Amarantha. I mean, Rhysand could know, but I don't think he'd tell. You know what? I think Rhysand actually maybe planted this purposely because he knew that it would be easy to tell her the right answer. So it would make it an easy task. Yeah, that was my theory actually while I was listening to it, because he helps her with it because they have the bond. And every time she goes to reach for the wrong lever, he makes it painful. And then when she reaches for the right one, she's like, oh, no pain here. I'm like, pull it, you dumb. Like, she just sits on it for a while. Like, let me test this one again. Pain, pain, pain.
Well, she looks at her hand in the first one. And it's like the eye is narrowing at her.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? And then she looks up to Rhysand, and he is like acting bored and aloof.
Yeah, he's keeping his straight face.
Mm-hmm. Like, of course he is.
But like, we know it's him. Mm. Like, she knows it's him. But yeah, her reasoning behind what she's going to pull is so dumb. She's like, two's a good number. Me and Tamlin are two. And then one is a bad number. That's like Aramantha. Like, she's a one person. And then three is just too much. So I'm going to pull number two.
Three is three sisters. And I was not in a great place with the three sisters.
Yeah. And I think that, like, when she pulls three and Rhysand is like, you have to pull three, it feels like we're foreshadowing a love triangle. Like, mm-hmm. it's coming.
Well, wasn't it? It was number one that was the correct
number. No, it was three.
No, it was number one.
No, it wasn't. It was three.
Oh, first lover gave her pain and third did not. Rhysand looked bored.
Yes, it's three.
Okay, so she pulls number three and hallelujah, she didn't kill either of them. Thank God. It was only one little dumb thing you had to do. Cool. So she's like, I'm going to cry. Like, I couldn't read it. I was about to kill us both. And then Rhysand, his voice comes into her mind and he's like, cry. Don't let her see her. You cry. Stand don't up. Don't break.
Satisfaction. Yeah, and he's like, count to 10 and stare her down the entire time.
And then she's like, Rhysand's in my mind. So is this the mating bond?
This is the mating bond. It's the mating bond.
Okay. It's not the tattoo. Then how is he just utilizing it right now?
It's getting stronger.
Oh, because they're together more.
Mm-hmm. And like in chapter 41, it was also the bond, I think, that's allowing her to see what he's seeing. Like, he's projecting the images of like the night and the music.
Oh, I didn't get that.
Yeah, he was giving her a gift. And I think this is all part of his plan to like not have her be killed, is to have the task not be physical, but be a riddle so that he can just cheat with her.
Yeah, so anyways, so she gets back to her cell and then like the tears like start to stream down. Mm-hmm. And Rhysand comes into the cell and he's like, stop crying.
Well, no, he's like, oh, you're still weeping. And then he comes and licks the tears off her face and he's like, oh, I thought that would get you to stop.
He's like, yeah, he comes closer and she's like, and then he like licks one tear off and then she's like, oh, and then the next one and then the next one and she's like, oh, and then she's like, no. And he's like,
yeah, she's like, ew, and he's like, really, ew, I sense some other emotions. That was like, I can't imagine someone licking tears off my face though. I'd be like, get the fuck away from my eye with your disgusting mouth. Mm-hmm. Like, mouth bacteria does not belong in my eyeball. That is like asking for an eyeball infection.
Eesh. Okay, number chapter 41.
Was there, let me just see if we miss anything there. Yeah, no, I guess that was it, really.
Amarantha's favorite darling.
Oh yeah, so Amarantha, she's like favorite darling when she's telling her to go into the challenge. She's like, favorite darling, you have to do this, and I was like, ew, why are you saying favorite darling? Unless I like misheard that, because it did not sound like Rhysand.
I don't know. Okay.
All right, 41.
41.
41.
This one was just dumb. So anyways.
Yeah.
Rhysand's. Wait. Yeah. So I think you have more info on this. Rhysand giving Feyre the night off.
So he says, like, you don't have to come tonight, the night that she's crying. But she has to be on her, look her best the next night to come be his escort again.
Okay.
And
then his maids.
So his maids come to get her and they are bringing her to like do the paint, I guess, and they have to hide because they hear the adder. It's they hide behind a tapestry, and The Adder is talking with a grumbly voice that we don't know, who sounds like he works for Highburn, and kind of being like, Highburn's pissed off. Aramantha is doing all this stuff on her own. Like, he doesn't necessarily approve of what's going on with this girl. And it sounds like Aramantha's plan already is to turn her into a fae, because they're saying like, oh, will all of the High Lords give their gift?
Oh.
And yeah. And he's like, the Adder's like, yeah, she's going to make him give it. They'll give it. So that can only be about turning into a fae. So I guess it's part of her evil plan to do something to like torture Tamlin by turning her into a fae. I don't know.
That's interesting.
I know. I can just picture Rhysand listening and being like, that's interesting. You know what? Oh my God. Rhysand is like a combination of Jack Sparrow and Finnick O'Dare to me.
Except you can say both their names correctly.
Well, they're both different. Easy. Jack Sparrow is a very easy name.
Finnick?
Finnick is an easy name to say, too. Like, if you look at it, it looks like Finnick. So, anyway, in 41, like, we've got the bond really showing for the first time exactly what it can do. And that's what I feel like it is, the bond projecting these images into Feyre's mind to keep her from feeling really, really depressed, mm-hmm. giving her music, because he can see that she loves dancing, I think, from her many nights having her dance for him.
Well, so is the music that they're playing at the party like I'm that, or is it a different type
party? Or maybe I was assuming it was the party, but like he's outside, so I don't know. Maybe he went to the night court.
Oh yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Well, she thinks it's from Tamlin, and she's like, it's his love. The music is beauty and goodness.
Lol. I missed that bit.
Yeah, because it reminds her probably of like the fire night or whatever that other night where like,
yeah,
they danced and he fiddled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the fiddling. The master fiddler. But that's about it for chapter 41, right?
Yeah, she just has two more days until the trial.
Mm-hmm. We're at the fucking finale. Mm-hmm. We made it. We're here. It's very exciting. This is like the part of the book I've been waiting for the whole book. How do we get to her turning into a fae? So we'll be tackling that next week, I guess, right? Oh, wait. Friday?
No, yeah, we still week. Have like.
Do we have we lots still of have,
like
chapters
six
left?
Chapters left? I think.
Oh man. Okay. Next week. Next week we have chapters 42 and 43, so we're getting there. Well, that is going to wrap up our show today. We are going to record Fangirl Tea Time. We're going to be talking about some deeper, more personal aspects of influential music in our lives. And as always, like updates on our lives and all that stuff. It's a fun, casual time out there that will be available for the Team Jacob patrons and up at patreon.com/thoseworkingfangirls. Thank you all so much for listening. Our podcast is edited by Alex Polis and Jake Needham, with music by Cole Jenkins and vocals by Heather Traska. We are so, so thankful for y'all's listenership. All of our links to our socials are in our show notes. If you're not following us over there already, we'd greatly appreciate you hitting one of those up. Thanks for listening. I'm Christine.
I'm Natasha.
And we'll see you next Friday. We release episodes every Friday. Bye.
Bye.